Anyway, so look, what we're dealing with is the following. I call it Kviat Tiv Hadin. And that means to determine the nature of the din. And we're going to break that down into many, many different subcategories. And the first subcategory that we want to study is what I call Din Mamon or Din Isur. Now the word Isur here can refer to a mitzvah, can refer to Kedusha, to Kedusha. It can refer to many different things. Mamon refers to mamon. That refers to monetary law. So we have in halacha an overlap, if you will, of both monetary law and ritual law, if you want to call it. Law of prohibitions and obligations. And those obligations are not monetary in nature. They're religious obligations. Now one of the examples, and we're going to try to elaborate on this today, is the law of Lo Tonu Ish Et Amitecha. And really what we should do if we have time is to go through the psukim inside the Torah, because the way the psukim are formulated are very important. But maybe, you know, in the limited amount of time we have, we'll see what we can accomplish. Now what does this mean, Lo Tonu Ish Et Amitecha? So let's take a classical case of Onoa. I sell you something that has a market value of X, and I overcharge you. Or, alternatively, I sell you something that has a market value of X, and you underpay. So in the first case, it's what's called the onas lokeach. The lokeach is the buyer. And in the second case, it's onas mocher. The mocher was the one who was cheated. Now, the law of onah can be broken down into three parts. One part is what we call tashlumei hahefresh, which means that if, let's say, in the case of onas lokech, I overcharge you by 10, so in that case, I have to reimburse you that 10. Clear? That's one category of onah. The second category of onah is called bitul mekach, which means that the whole deal is completely off. And we'll have to do a new kinyan, and a new circumstance, new conditions, write a new contract, whatever it might be. The third dimension, the third category, is the iser, is the violation of the lav of Lo Tonu Ish Et Amitecha. And one of the issues that comes up in the laws of Onah, in many different ways, in many different contexts, is what's the relationship between the din mamon, which means either A, that you have to give me back the difference, the differential, or B, that the whole deal is off, that's called bitul mekach, that's on the one side of the equation, and the lav on the other side of the equation. And basically, the first issue that we're going to study today is, can there be a violation of the lav without any of the laws of mamon? Meaning that you have no rights to get to claim, oh, the deal is off, or I want to get reimbursed, I was cheated, I was overcharged. No, none of that is relevant. But nevertheless, if I sold you and I deliberately cheated you, then I violate the law of Lo Tonu Ish Et Amitecha. That's going to be the first question that we have today. Now, if one would argue, again, there are two possibilities here, but if one would argue that there's no such thing as a violation of onah without the din mamon, without the monetary aspects, it's a package deal, then basically any issue, what we call a safek, with regard to the lav of onah, should be dealt with and analyzed from the perspective of safek mamon. Now what we discussed here, Elia, right?
Elias.
Elias, but you aren't here, so I just want to give you the nutshell of it. I think, Mitch, you are here. Is that the laws of Safek are very different with regard to Isur than with regard to Mamon. For example, if I don't know if this is yours, then I don't have to return it to you until you give me proof, and that's called Amotzi Mechavero Alavaraya. But on the other hand, in a general Safek Isur, I have to be Machmir. Again, let's assume it's a Safek Doraisa. I have to be Machmir. And therefore, the question arises, well, if I don't know if this is yours or not, then Midin Gzela, I don't want to violate the Isur Lo Tigzal, I should have to give it to you in order to circumvent, in order to obviate the violation of the Isur Gezel. So the answer to that question is that the Din Mamon determines the Gzela. Why? Because Gzela if you put all of Tayag mitzvahs, you know, you take 612 on the one side of the equation and one on the other, gzela lo tigzol is unique. Gzela is determined by din mamon. Once you decide who owns the mamon, then you could register the law of and the lav of gzela. So I don't know if that was clear, because that was part of a larger discussion. But so we don't know how to define lo tonu ish et amitecha. Is the iser or no determined by the mamon, or it could operate independent as a lav of ona? And the one who addresses this question is the Ramban. And where is this Ramban? You would think it'd be a Ramban in his Chidush al Hashas on Masechta Bava Metzia, which deals with Ono. No, it's the Ramban in his Pirush al Torah. And that's what you have here on page Samach Zayin. And if you take a look at the right column, the paragraph that starts Aleph, which would be the third paragraph on your page, and you count down, let's say, seven lines. Let's see, one, two, three, four, five, six lines down. You see a Ramban, the Perush al Torah, and this is at the end of Sefer Vayikra, in Parshas Bahar. There the Torah speaks about the prohibitions that apply to Yovel, and to, you know, returning someone's land, you know, when the Yovel comes around. There the Torah deals with selling things and the lav of onah. So in that context, the Ramban has the following presentation. We have a principle which is established in the Gemara in Bav Metzia Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph, called Ein Onah B'Karkos. Now that's fascinating. What that means is that if I sell you a table, which is a movable object, metaltalin, then if I overcharge you, you have a claim of onah. However, if I sell you a piece of real estate, then there's no claim of onah. And that's established by the Gemara Bav Metzia as a, you know, without any issue. You know, there's no one less mind than Pollock. You know, it's one of those few Gemaras in Shas which establishes a principle that's universally accepted. What does the Ramban want to know? The Ramban wants to know the following. It's one thing to say that in the case of karka, if I sell you real estate, then there's no set price, let's say. You know, you could always claim, well, you know what, the man is very eager to buy this real estate. You know, they say in real estate that the rule is location, location, location. He needs that piece of real estate right there. He's willing to pay home tafot, you know, just quote your price and I'll buy it. And Shalom al Yisrael. You know, I'm mochel you on all of them. Just sell me the, you know, let's say for example, you get a job in a certain location and the job entails working on Shabbos. Now, that's not usually allowed, but if you're a rabbi, that's when you do most of your work. So you have a contract in which you have to work on Shabbos. And now, the question is, you have to find a place that's in close proximity to the synagogue where you'll be working on Shabbos. And if there's only one thing available on the market, you know, you're willing to pay even above the market value. So that's called Enono Likarkos. But does that mean, therefore, that if I'm selling you a piece of real estate, I can deliberately cheat you? Now, it's one thing if I say to you, look, you know, you might find this piece of real estate at a cheaper price. You know, go to your expert assessors and they'll tell you that the market value is X, I'm charging you more. But it's another thing when I fool you into thinking that it's worth Y when it's really only worth X. Am I allowed to do that? What happened to the Iser Lav of Lotonu Isha Samisen? So in this Ramban, which is a very long and complicated presentation, he shows you that if you read the Pasuk carefully, there are two parts to the Pasuk. There are two dimensions to this Parsha of Onah. One is that the sale itself, in all its monetary dimensions, has to be appropriate for the market price. And if it's not, then there's a claim of Onah. And that claim is taken in front of a Beis Din in a litigation between the defendant and the plaintiff. But there's another part of the parasha that says, Lo tonu ish et amitecha. Do not cheat your fellow man. And the Ramban wants to split between the two. and to suggest that as far as Metaltalin is concerned, the entire parasha, both variables, apply. And in Metaltalin, you could have a claim against me if I overcharged you, given the market value. And if I deliberately cheated you, I violate a law. When it comes to Karka, there we split the parasha into two. The first part of the parasha that says kiyum kar mim kar miyad liyad, etc., etc., that applies as far as dini momentus. That doesn't apply to karka. You as the buyer or me as the seller have no right, have no recourse to any sort of a claim, a lawsuit in the courts. But the second part of the parasha, which says lo tonu isha tamitecha, thou shalt not cheat your fellow man, that applies even to karka. So that according to the Rabban, the Iser dimension of Lotonu stands independent of the monetary law of Lotonu. And just to show you here a couple of, you know, highlight a couple of words in the Rabban, and here we'll fast forward to the left column for a moment, and let's see if I can, if you could put your finger like smack in the middle of the left column for a second. Again, just because I don't know if we'll have the time and the energy to go through the entire Ramban, although I think we should, but he says, there's a line that starts with the word choshev on the left column. He says, Bivadai hama'anet chaveiro ledat, if he cheats his friend deliberately, over belav, he violates the law of Lotonu, bein b'metaltalin, bein b'karka. Shebahen diber hakasuv, when the Torah at the end of the parasha says lotonu ish et achiv, etc., etc., he's talking to all kinds of cheating in all cases, no matter what the subject of the sale was, whether the object of the sale was metaltalin or whether it's karka. Shehu mazhir, the Torah is warning us, sheiknuvim karu, that you should purchase and sell, because again, the Ramban uses both languages because, as we said before, there's sometimes the seller is cheated by the buyer, because the buyer knows that he's underpaying, and there's sometimes that the seller is the one who's cheating and the buyer is being cheated because he's overpaying. Lefi ashanim. Okay.
Shanim is only karma. Not a Talmud concept.
Right. Right, so that's what he's talking now about karka, I think. Right. You know, his chiddush is that even in the case of karka, where the principle, the rule is eino no b'karkos, nevertheless, he's not allowed to deliberately cheat him. Let's say, for example, it's the 48th year of the Yovel, so he's selling it basically for 1 year, and he's going to charge him the full price. He should really reduce the price. So he's deliberately reducing the price at the expense of the buyer, because the buyer, for some reason, is unaware of the fact that the Yovel is around the corner. And that's what the Torah says, Lefi Hashanim, right? That he Yom Kuro Lefi Hashanim, he should calculate the years until Yovel. V'loyonu ish et achiv, and one person is not allowed to cheat the other person. Again, it can go both ways, the buyer or the seller. But be that as it may, we're talking about an iser law that applies to karka as well as to metaltalin. Rabotenu chidshu, Rabotenu he means Torah Sheval Peh, ba'onas tashlumin, that as far as the monetary dimension of onah, bishtus hamekach. Okay, let's talk about shtus for a minute. Let's say, for example, the object is worth, let's say, 6, and he charges him 7. That means he's overpaying by 1 over 6, which is called shtus. Shtus is called onah. Now, what does onah mean? Onah means that if in this case the buyer overpaid, he gets back the 1. He has a claim to get back the 1. And then bitul mekach biyosem ishtus. Let's say the object was worth 6, and he charged him 8. So now he overpaid by 2. 2 over 6 is 1/3. That's already called bitul mekach, if you remember the categories that we spoke about earlier. Umizeb milvad, but only from this dimension of monetary law, miatu hakarkos, were karkos excluded. The Chachamim did not extend these dinim of mekach tos and onah to karkos. Lufisha onah b'hem afil b'yesem ishtus, even if he overcharges him by more than a sixth, mechila. the person is willing to buy it because he's desperately in need to purchase that piece of real estate. And therefore in Karkos, the law of more than a shtus, when he charges him 8 for something that's market valued at 6, is exactly identical to metaltel in bepachos mishtus. Let's say, for example, I sell you a table that's worth 6, and I overcharge you 6.5, 6.5. So in such a case, there's mechila. There's no claim whatsoever of getting back that half of a shekel or whatever it is that I overcharged you. Afal pishu also lahonos came ladas. Even though there's mechila, nevertheless you're not allowed to deliberately try to cheat him and mislead him. If you tell him all the facts on the ground and you say, look, I need to charge you so and so, otherwise it's not worth it for me to sell you my real estate, and he accepts that deal, that might come under a different halacha, which again, if you turn for a second to page Samach Tes, number Gimel, just again, and then go back to number Samach Zayin, just make a mental note that we're going to get to Gimel, and that the question is whether I can make a condition with you up front that you won't have any claim of Onah, and therefore I can completely obviate the violation of the Isra Onah. Okay, that's a separate topic we'll get to in just a few minutes. But now again, back to number Aleph on page Samach Zayin. Aval ein derech b'nei adam levatel memkorom b'fnei Onah mu'etet kazu. That we could say that in the case of metaltolin, where the ono is less than a shtus, less than 1/6, or in the case of karka, even if it was more than a shtus, a person doesn't want to back out of the deal. He's willing to take that loss, and that's called mechila. V'darshu chachamim. Now, how does this integrate into the parsha itself? Mipnei she'amar akasuv, the Torah says the following: V'chitim kuru mimkar lamitecha. O kana davar hanikne miyad liyad. Now what you should do is put a period, so to speak. There is no period, obviously, but we're going to put a semicolon. And that part of the pasuk is referring, according to Chazal, to metaltolin. What leads Chazal to assume that part of the pasuk is referring to metaltolin? Because it says davar hanikne miyad liyad. And davar hanikne miyad liyad is called metaltolin.
That's not in the pasuk.
That's not in the pasuk, but I'm saying that that's what the Torah Shebaal Peh added to the pasuk. But again, according to the Ramban, the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Chachamim, interpret that only to the first part of the pasuk. And then you put a period. And then it says, Lo tonu ishet es achiv. So that which is in the beginning of the pasuk, where the emphasis is on the memkar, you know, the sell, or Lamitecha, that's the buyer, so it's either the seller who's selling in Memkar, or Lamitecha is the buyer. That refers to Dovra Nikna Miyad Liyad. That refers to Metaltalin. And that generates the monetary law of Onah, which means Bitul Mekach, or it means Mechila, or it means Onah. And then the second part of the Pasuk, this is the way Chazal read it, Al Tonu Ish Et Achiv. That already is no longer limited to metaltolin. That no longer is interpreted as dovra nikne miyad liyad. But lotonu ish et achiv, that has to do with the relationship between one human being and another, what we call bein adam lechavero, and how I treat you and how I behave with you. But that has nothing to do with the memkar, the emphasis on the memkar, which is the monetary aspect. Lamadnu, what are the Chachamim teaching us through this way of splitting the pasuk into two? Sheyesh ba'onah din miyuchad b'metaltolin. That the first part of the pasuk, which is referring according to Chazal to a dovra nikne miyad liyad, namely metaltolin, is limited to metaltolin. V'eino noig v'karkos. And what's that? Hu chazoras hamamon. Again, chazoras hamamon, as we said before, breaks down into two possibilities: either shtus, where he gets the tashlum and he gets a rebate, or bitul amekah. Aval azharas halav. But if you're talking about the lav, then no heges bekulon. That's no longer limited to metaltolin, but applies to karka as well. If you fast forward to the next paragraph of Rabbeinu Yonah, quoting the Shita Mekubetz of Baba Basra Yin Zayin, he says, Yesh lomer dekol hani de'elem onah, this whole list of things which don't have onah, for example, not only karka, but also eved, if I sell you an eved, there's no onah, vaday over bohem alav. If he deliberately cheats him, again, whether it's the buyer or the seller, there's a violation of the law. Dilo nismatu, these things which are excluded, like karka and avodim, ela bechazora, only in that monetary law of returning it, of bitul mekach, or returning the right, the differential in the price. V'cheina parsha muchachas, and Rabbi Yonah also like the Ramban, again, they were contemporaries. I think Rabbi Yonah was a little bit older than Ramban, but they overlap. He says, V'cheina parsha muchachas. And he says, I can prove it to you from the parasha that there definitely is a lav, because as Mitch said before, when we talk about Yovel, we're talking about Karka. And the Torah says, Lefi rov hashonim tarba miknoso, meaning that the value that you're charging the buyer should reflect the rov hashanim, that's how many shanim are there until the next yovel, and then it says velotonu. The lav is written in that context, and since the context of yovel there in Parshas Bahar is karka, and yet the Torah adds on lotonu, it means that there must be a violation of the lav with regard to karka al ma'af bekarkos who's harnu al onah. So there's an isa lav on onah to enjoin us from deliberately cheating someone even on a sale of real estate. The Gemara says ain't onah bekarkos. That means that there are no dinim of monetary reimbursement and cancellation of the sale itself with regard to karka. Ad kan Chachmei Sfarad. Then we get to Chachmei Ashkenaz. So according to the Ramban and Rabbeinu Yonah, both independently coming up with the same Chiddush, the Parsha indicates that the lav of Lotonu applies even to Karka. How do we reconcile that with the fact that Chazal in Torah Shebal Peh insists that there's no din of Onah in Karka when the lav itself applies to Karka? The answer is that the din of Onah is the monetary law of Onah, but that has nothing to do with the violation of the lav, which stands independent on its own two feet. So with regard to Metalton, we have Tzvei Dinim. We have one din of Memkar, which is with regard to Metalton, we have one din of what? Of Dine Mominus. And that gives the buyer or the seller a claim in monetary terms, and then we have another din of an iser onah, and that applies to metalton. With regard to karka, we have a mute that excludes karka from the din mon, but as far as the din iser is concerned, karka is included in the law of don't thou shalt not cheat your friend. Now, if you take a look back on Samach Vav, and you'll see number one and number two on the bottom right. You see that? So this is where Rabbi Adler presents this concept of Iser and Mammon. He calls it Sad Iser and Sad Mammon. I call it Din Iser and Din Mammon. Okay, each person has their own nusach. And he writes that there are two possibilities. Possibility number one is, when there's an overlap of Iser and Mammon, is that one of the two becomes Ikar, becomes primary. Hasheni, the second one, becomes Tofel, that's secondary. And then in the second possibility, he says, no, there's an equal relationship between Tzad Mammon and Tzad Iser, they become one entity. So at this point in our discussion of Onah, we are accepting number one, which means that the Tzad Iser is an Ikar. It's not schlepped along by the Mammon. Now we're about to see the Chachmei Ashkenaz, and they're going to take the second side, that it's the Mammon that's Ikar. Aval Bali Atosvot, on the bottom here of Samach Chet, B'tchilat Perek Ezu Neshup of Metzia Samach Aleph, Cholkin V'sovim Shaklal She'ein Ono B'Karkos, Shayach Gam be'inyonei mominos v'gam be'inyonei isurim. Now there's no such thing, according to Tosfos, as violating a lav if I sell you a piece of real estate or I sell you an eved and I overcharge you based on the market value. And that means that according to Tosfos, as he points out in the next paragraph on the top of the left column, Tzad Mamon Sholet Be'inyan Onoah Ha'iser Hu Tolada Me'achiv Mamon. And this is what we discussed earlier about the law of Gzela, if you remember, that whether or not I'm considered stealing from you depends upon whether or not it's yours. So the Mamon determines the Iser. Here too, in Dine Onoah, if there's a monetary Onoah, if the Torah, the Halacha, recognizes a monetary Onoah, I overcharge you, etc., and you have monetary rights to back down out of the deal, etc., etc., then there's an Iser Onoah. The Iser Onoah is dependent upon the Mamon. Umi'achad, since ein chiv mamon bi'onos avadim, again he could have mentioned karka, is gam iser ono lesser. Aval lefi Ramban v'Rabbeinu Yonah, ein tzad echad sholet al tzad sheni. Again, I would have said it a little differently, that the tzad iser or the din iser is independent of the mamon, and therefore with regard to karka and avadim, there's an iser ono without a monetary claim of ono. So far so good? Now what I'm going to do now is leave Bet until we do Gimel. So we'll bleed it, we'll come back to Gimel. Let's just take a look at Gimel. I'm sorry, let's do Gimel and we'll come back to Bet. And he wants to know about Tanai. Now, we have a general rule that there's a difference between Iser and Mamon with regard to Tanai. In monetary transactions, I can make any condition I want, or you as the buyer can make any conditions. The seller could set conditions, the buyer could set conditions. In fact, if I don't pay you for Shmira, the Torah says you're potter from Gnei Vaveda, but I can make a condition with you that you be a Shomer, and yet you have to give me the Shmira of a Shomer Sachar, even though I'm not paying you for that. Because again, in monetary law, everything is flexible, we have total gemishut, and it's kechomer v'yada yotzer. However, with regard to Isur, there's a rule that says, masnal mashikosuv b'Torah t'no batel. That if I make a t'nai, if I make a condition, as far as Isur is concerned, then that t'nai, if it violates the law of the Torah, is completely null and void. So for example, one of the essential elements in marriage, in issues, is ono, is ono. Again, ono with an I, not ono with an al. So let's say a man says to a woman, Hareat mekudeshes li, al menas she'en lach alai ono, that there's no ono in this marriage. So the Gemara establishes t'no batel. But if a man says to a woman, Hareat mekudeshes li, al menas she'en lach alai sher viksut, meaning that I don't have to pay for clothing and for shelter, and food, then t'no kaya, because that becomes a t'nai shebemoma. Clear? So again, whenever we're calculating the differences between mamon on the one hand and iser on the other hand, and we spoke about safek, that safek mamon lukula, safek iser lukumra, another calculation would be t'nai. A t'nai that violates the law of the Torah as far as iser is batel, whereas a t'nai as far as mamon is concerned is t'no kaya. What happens in the case of Onah? Again, not Onah with an ayin and a hay at the end, but Onah with an aleph and an aleph, right? And then a hay at the end. So in the case of Onah, it's very fascinating. Can I sell you an object, and the condition built into that sale is that you will have no claim against me as far as Onah is concerned. We can completely obviate and circumvent the laws of Onah based on the condition between the buyer and the seller that was accepted by both. So that's a machlokas rishonim in Masechet Bava Metzia Nun Aleph. The Gemara there says, Omer Rav Hanan l'didi mefarsha le'mine demar Shmuel ha'omer l'chaver o'menas she'en lach alai Onah ein lo olav Onah. Now again, the plot grows thicky here because there are two ways of formulating this t'nai. The first way is to say, Almanas she'en lecha alai onah. In other words, I'm not saying anything about the sale itself and all the conditions of the sale. Am I charging you the fair price, the markup? Am I overcharging you? Are you underpaying me? And so forth. So that is not. But ein lecha alai onah. In the relationship between you and I, the buyer and the seller, there won't be any onah. The second way is a much more faulty way, much more problematic, when he says Almanas she'ein bo ona. He says that this sale doesn't have ona in it. Vareyesh bo ona, and in truth it does have ona. So in the first case, according to Rav Hanan, and that's the way he interprets Shmuel, the ona law is completely suspended, is completely neutralized. Why? Because he says, Almanas she'ein lecha alai ona. Then the Gemara asks Akasha from a Braisa, Hanose vanosein ba'amana, v'omer lechaveru almanas she'ein lecha alai ona, ein lo olav ona, l'rav di'omar ano di'amri afilu Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, there are a lot of different details here, and so forth and so on. And here we have a machlokes rishon. Ayin Tosus is towards the end of that paragraph. Rabbeinu Chananel posa kerav, dilchus kerav bi'isure. So Rav says that if you make a t'nai that there won't be any claim of onah, then such a t'nai is completely null and void. And Rabbeinu Chananel accepts the sheet of Rav against the sheet of Shmuel, that we saw Rav Hanan at the beginning of the sugi said that such a t'nai is valid. So Tosus says, Tema, Dalo pligi im mutolasos kein, el pligi im chayav lahachzer onov, halocha kishmuel bedine. Now, Shmuel, as we saw based on Rav Hanan's interpretation, allows for such a condition. Rav denies the validity of such a condition. The efshal lefarish, and maybe what they're arguing is how to define the two dimensions and the relationship thereof with regard to onah. What really reigns supreme? If we're talking about a monetary law and the lav is determined and is a poel yotze, it's a repercussion, it's an extension of the monetary law, then the halacha should be kishmuel, and Shmuel says that this t'nai is valid. Aval imat sad isur sholeit, but if we see that and define the isur lav of lotonu as a separate independent isur that has a life of its own, then we're going to be paskening like Rav, because Hilchasa Kerav B'Isure. So again, let's just summarize. We've been actually enumerating many different nafkaminas between Isur and Mamon, whether it's Safek, whether it's T'nai. Now we have a third nafkamina. How do we paskin in a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel? Here's the difference between Mamon and Isur. Hilchasa Kishmuel B'Mamon, B'dini Mamonos, Hilchasa Kerav B'Isure. Now what happens when I have lo sonu isha samiso, which is an overlap of the two? It's both Isur and Mamon. So it depends. If the Isur is determined by the Mamon, then I should paskin like Shmuel. If the Mamon determines the Isur, right? If the Isur is independent of the Mamon, then I should paskin like Rav. And that seems to be a machlok shin Rabbeinu Chananel and the Balei HaTosfos. The Balei HaTosfos assume that everything is determined by Mamon, and that again reflects very well with the sheet of the Balei Tosfos that Eino Noah Karkos means period, that there's not even a lav of Onoah in Karkos, because since the Didi Mamonis is no Onoah, is Mamela, the lav is a result, a repercussion, an offshoot of the Din Mamon. If that be the case, then when we have an issue about whether or not Onoah is Chal, and Shmuel says there is no Onoah, and Rav says there is Onoah, we're going to pass it like Shmuel, because the lav itself, the Isur aspect, is determined by the Mamon. But Rabbeinu Chananel really belongs to the Chachmei Sfarad that we discussed before, the Rabban and Rabbeinu Yonah. And he's understanding that the Isur is an independent element here. So you want to obviate the Isur by making a T'nai? No, we're going to pass like Rav. Because Hilchos HaKerav B'Isurei, that the Lav of Onah will kick in, will apply. And Dalit, what about Pachos Mishtus? Okay? Let's say there's a halacha that if I charge you for something that's marketed at 6, I charge you 6.5, then the law is that there's no onah, which means that the buyer doesn't have recourse to claim that half as a compensation. He doesn't have rights to be compensated for the extra half of shekel or whatever that he paid. But there's a machlokas here between the Balei HaTos and the Ramban. And the question is whether or not you violate an Iser Onah in the case of Pachos Mishtos. So if I deliberately fool you, you think that the market value is 6.5 because that's what I told you, and in truth I know very well that the market value is 6. So that's a case of Pachos Mishtos. And the Ramban is of the opinion that in such a case I violate the Iser Onah. True, you have no recourse to force me to cough up and reimburse you for the half a shekel that I overcharge you, but nevertheless I deliberately fooled you and I violate the Iser Onah. However, the Balei HaTosfos are of the opinion that since in this case there is no Din Onah b'Toras Mamon, and the buyer in this case can't claim I want to get reimbursed for that half a shekel that I overpaid, so therefore there's no Iser Lav as well. And once again, this is all consistent because the Ramban l'shitasa that the lav of onah is a separate iser of beinonu l'chavero. I can't cheat you deliberately, so therefore it remains applicable even when there's no din mamon of onah. Whereas Tosfos holds that the din lav is a result of and generated by the din mamon, and if there's no din mamon, then there's no iser as well. And now what we want to do is, we want to go back to number Beis. Now for number Beis, I actually made a chart here. I should photocopy it for you. Okay, we'll see. You gentlemen are geniuses, so you probably don't need the chart. I need a chart for this. Okay. Here, there are two basic cases. Okay. One case is Onas Mekach, and the other case is called Onas Domin. Okay, I'll try to explain what this means as we go along. So the first case, which is called Mekach, okay, that's a pretty easy case, and there's not going to be any debate about that. So let's go through that case. So the true value is 6. The true value on the market is 6. And he paid 5. Correct? So how much did he underpay, let's say, in this case? 1/5. Correct? Ah, okay. Okay, then you're going to further complicate my mind here. I'm still jet lagging, so go easy on me. I just arrived recently from Chutzlitz.
Yeah,
okay. Fine. The other alternative would be that the true, again, we're still talking about Mekach. The true value of the Mekach is 6, once again, and he paid 7. So in the first case, by paying 5, the mocher was cheated, correct? And he was cheated by 1/6, so that's onah. In the second case, the buyer was cheated. Again, he paid 7 when it was worth 6, so he was cheated by 1/6. So everybody agrees in this case, there's no debate about this, that the onah was 1/6. Okay? That's called Mekach. Now we have the more complicated case, and that's called Maos. Okay? And this case of Maos is going to be a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. Okay? What's the case? The true value is 5, and he paid 6. Okay? He paid 6. Let's see. If he paid 6, then he paid 1 extra zuz, let's say, over 5. Is that an onah of 20%? So in such a case, if we analyze these numbers from a Mekach perspective, that's going to be called Bittel Mekach. Why? Because anything above a 6th is Bittel Mekach. Right? Let's just review again. If it's 1/6, then he gets back the money, the compensation. If it's more than 1/6, then the mekach is bottom.
How is it different from the case you just said before?
So again, in the first case, the true value was 5, yeah, and he paid... I'm sorry, the true value was 6, and he paid 5.
Oh, okay.
Right? So if he paid 5, then there was a cheating in terms of the mekach of 1 over 6. Yeah. Here, the true value is 5, and he paid 6. So that's 1 over 5. So that's a greater percentage, and that already leads me into that category called bittul mekach that we spoke about before. Again, this is all going to Rav. Shmuel is going to disagree, as we'll see in a minute. Now we have a case where the true value is 7, and he paid 6. That means he underpaid. Now let's look at the mekach. The mekach was really worth on the market 7. So he underpaid by 1 over 7. That's going to be mechila. So again, this is all Rav shita, because Rav takes mekach from the beginning to the end. In other words, we always look at the ratio between what he paid and what the true value of the mekach is. That's called mekach. And therefore, in this case where either the true value was 5 and he paid 6, which would be an onah of 1 over 5, and that's called bittul mekach, or the true value was 7 and he only paid 6, which is 1 over 7 of an underpaying, and therefore the onah of the mocher was 1 over 7, that's going to be mechila. That's how Rav says it. Now comes Shmuel. Shmuel says, Basar mos azlina. Now, if we look at the mos, then the emphasis now shifts from the market value to the amount that was paid. Correct? So in the case where it was valued at 5 and he paid 6, then vis-a-vis the amount that he paid, right, he overpaid by 1, that's 1 over 6, is that's going to be called onah, whereas if it was 1 over 5, based on bittul mekach, which was Rav Shita, that based on mekach, then it would be bittul mekach, because it's a 20% onah. So again, let's just go over this. The true value is 5. The buyer paid 6. Right, he overpaid. How do we view this? How do we define this? According to Rav, we look at the mekach. The mekach means the market value. So if he overpaid by 1 vis-a-vis a mekach of 5, that's called bittul mekach, because that's a 20% cheating. If on the other hand we hold like Shmuel, then we look at the number that he paid and we see how much he overpaid or underpaid. In this case, he overpaid 1 over 6, and that's called onah. It's not bittul mekach, which means that the buyer who overpaid cannot back out of the deal. The deal is absolutely binding and he can't void it. He can only claim, I want to get that 1 back. Then we have the case where it's worth 7 and he paid 6. Here there was onah for the mocher, because the mocher was underpaid. So if we take a look at the mekach, he was underpaid by 1 over 7, which according to Rav, therefore based on mekach, is going to be bittul, is going to be mechila, correct? Because 1 over 7 is less than 1 over 6. If on the other hand we take a look at the mos, so he paid 6 when he should have been paying 7, so that's 1 over 7. Just one second, I'm sorry, 1 over 6. Okay, sorry, I almost had it. 1 over 6, and that's called onah. Okay. So that chart, which I made for myself as I was waiting on Sunday in Misrata Pnim for 4 hours till they called my number. If you need any aitzes for Misrata Pnim, my aitzes to you is just try not to have to go. That's all. If I would have been willing to wait a month or two, they would have given me an appointment. Okay, but I needed my passport. So. Okay, so that chart is a summary of the beginning of this paragraph called Beis. And the Rosh Paskins la halacha like Shmuel. And the Rosh gives a number of reasons why he paskins like Shmuel. So the first reason of the Rosh, which you'll see in this major paragraph, Os Beis, but if you count up from the bottom about 7 lines or 8 lines, he says, Hilchos HaKavase de Shmuel de Kaimel and Hilchos HaKavase Bedini. You see that? Now this really reflects what we saw in the Balei HaTosfos. It doesn't shock me that the Rosh at this point is presenting the Sheet of Tosfos that the Lav really depends upon the Dini Mamonos. So if you want to know whether or not this is Onah, then you're going to paskin like Shmuel, because again, in a machlokus between Rav and Shmuel and Dini and Mamonos, we paskin like Shmuel. And that's up to the word V'ot, which is the continuation of the Rosh. Then he says, V'od, Raya mehani trei uvdi devarshechi v'dchife deka. Okay, this is the part of the sugi that we didn't get into in Bamitziyah daf mem tes amid beis. Etein shis v'etvei ledina, 5, 5, 5. Is here he says again, we're going to paskin like Shmuel, but for a whole different reason. Now, again, we're skirting that other different reason for the time being, because again, that requires a lot more study. But the super commentary on the Rosh, the Pilpul Chalrifta, he is wondering why the Rosh feels compelled to find a second reason why we paskin like Shmuel. What's wrong with the first reason, Hilchasak Yishmuel Bedini? So he says the following, that maybe the Rosh was offering a second answer just in case you accept the sheet of the Chachmei Sfarad, of the Ramban and the Ran, namely that the Iser is independent of the Mamon, and therefore we should paskin based on the principle of Hilchos HaKirav B'Isure. Sam, you're early, but you can join us. We'll start at 10. Right. Well, what time did you think we're going to start? So you're early.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm early.
No, you don't have to apologize for coming early. On the contrary, if you're early, that's a good thing. We should give you a.
I've never been early to anything, but okay.
Yeah. All right.
I will listen.
Okay. So that what comes out is the following. The Rosh himself is vacillating back and forth, and therefore he offers both interpretations. Okay. Now, here's where I get lost, and maybe Rabosa, you could help me with this. Let's say the market value is 7. And the buyer underpaid and he only paid 6. Right? So from the perspective of Mekach, we have 1/7. From the perspective of Mos, we have 1/6. So if you hold like Rav, Mos, that's called Mechila. If you hold like Shmuel, that's called Onah. Okay? Now, when we say that halacha kirav beisure, then we're going to come to the conclusion that there's mechila here. Does that mean that there's no isur? Meaning, what I find strange is the following. Why do we pass like rav beisuri and like shmuel b'mamon? One could ostensibly argue, I'm not saying that this is, Torah's lokshin, Torah's Moshe, that since Rav had a certain expertise in Isurim, we have to be very careful about Isurim. So if it's not just a monetary claim that you have against me, we're going to start at 10 o'clock, so you're early. Okay, yeah. I'm so glad you came early. Because this way I can photocopy that. Oh, let me give you some.
I'm trying to get a copy right now, so I'm trying to.
Okay, great.
But I have the safer anyway.
Okay, great. Maybe, Sam, I could trouble you just to do a little copying, not too much. See if you can make a note of this here on the right side. I mean, we may do a few lines here, but this is the main thing.
Basically, 110 and 111.
Yeah. Okay, then. So I'm wondering, if we want to be more careful in Isurim, and therefore we want to take Rav's perspective, Rav is saying in the case where you went from 7 to pay 6, that's called Mechila, then Rav is really being Mekel over here. Adarava, Shmuel is the one who's saying that there's a violation of Onah. So I was wondering, what are the rules that govern a case where, from an Iser perspective, Rav is the Mekil? Are we going to say Hilchos HaKarav against Shmuel when Shmuel says Lechumra? That's, I don't know. I'm just throwing out a question here. See, in the first case, I understand it beautifully. Why? Because the market value is 5 and he paid 6. So even Shmuel would say that there's a violation of Onah. And therefore the whole question here is whether or not he just gets back to one that he overpaid, or does he complete, do I have rights to just completely null and void the whole sale? So there I would say, you know, I understand that if you want to say Hilchos HaKarav because there's an Iser involved, Mimanafshach, you know, there's an Iser. But in the second case where the market value was 7 and he paid 6, that's a little bit more complicated. Okay, Rabosai, so we're going to stop here, and I thank you for joining me today, and I'd love to have you again.